Hey everyone, this is Judy Warner with All Teams on Track podcast. Thank you for joining us today. If you've been listening to our podcast, I would equate today's podcast with being the dessert or the cherry on the sundae. It's a great story and a great woman that I look forward to sharing you with, Mary Elizabeth McCulloch, who has a startup called Project Vive. Before we get into our conversation with Mary Elizabeth, please remember to connect with Altium on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And I would also love to connect with you on LinkedIn or on Twitter. I'm at Altium Judy. And also, if you prefer to watch this on YouTube rather than listening, just go to Altium's YouTube channel, click on videos, and you'll see all of our podcasts there. So that is all the housekeeping. So let's get into the good stuff. So about a week or so ago, I got a message through LinkedIn, an introduction to this young lady, Mary Elizabeth, and she was telling me about her company, and we've since connected, had a couple conversations, and I'm so excited to share what this young innovator has done. So Mary Elizabeth, welcome, my dear. I'm so glad to have you, and thank you for taking the time to meet with me today.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be on this podcast.
Yeah, no, it's truly our honor. You know, technology does so much for us in our lives, but what you're doing is such a great human story. So tell us a little bit about your educational background, and tell us about your parents and background, because I think that does a lot to set up your story.
Yeah, awesome. So I guess educational background, I studied biomedical engineering at Penn State. I graduated spring 2016. I was always really interested in science and math in high school. What else? So my dad, he was a physics major at Penn State. He's gone into engineering for really his whole career. He's worked a lot with CNC controls in the milling machine industry. And then my mother, she has a biology degree, a mechanical engineering degree, and some biomedical engineering graduate work actually on the artificial heart at Penn State. So
wow.
Kind of my family's background and my own.
Impressive. So you shared with me a little bit about, I had asked you, did you always know you were going to go into engineering? So tell us a little bit about the things you and your dad and used to do when you were young, because I think it speaks to your story.
Yeah, so growing up, my parents really had an interest in farming and fixing things around the house and not going out and buying something new and really just trying to understand how to repair motors, with like rototillers, tractors, things like that. I guess my dad would also buy little chemistry kits for us to work on in the basement. We kind of had a blast with that, but also my parents always really encouraged me to try new things. And one of those new things was to go after I graduated high school to Ecuador, and I decided to be a Rotary exchange student. And so I spent a year in Ecuador, and outside of high school, I decided that it would kind of be cool to volunteer in an orphanage. And this orphanage specifically was for children and adults with disabilities. And this is kind of one of the things that I had never really had this like experience coming from, a student who grew up in the middle of Pennsylvania. And there I was, and I really was taken aback by a woman who was in a wheelchair sitting by the window, who had cerebral palsy and couldn't speak. So I started asking her yes and no questions, wasn't getting a response back. And then after, a couple days of working with her, saw that she had voluntary movements, if it wasn't a blink of an eye, and I figured out what was a yes movement and what was a no movement. Oh. What was a tremor, and started kind of communicating with her in this way. And it kind of hit me that there were a lot of other individuals, not just only in this orphanage, but in this country, who had these type of disabilities and didn't have someone there who was asking them these yes and no questions and figuring out what they liked to do, what they didn't like to do, and then really the lack of opportunity because of their disability that they had. And I was, 18 years old at the time, was going back to the United States to major in biomedical engineering, and I really thought, I would really like to create something to fix this. And who did I tell? I told my dad, and my dad right away was like, "You can fix it. You can create, some kind of device. I'm sure we can figure it out." Just like these little ideas that I had growing up that dad just was got really excited about. Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't go into it a little bit, but growing up, there was sometimes, like when I was learning how to draw flowers and stuff, he's like, "We could, make a milling machine that would draw these into bed boards, and you can program it that way." And anyway, it just kind of was a natural thing for my father to just, when that inventor side of me came out, for him to encourage that and not be some crazy idea, but something that, yeah, would take a lot of work, but I knew it was something I was really passionate about. And I'm 26 now, and I'm still just as passionate about it, and I'm really glad that my dad, pressed me to move on with it.
Well, I was so impressed in our conversation where I almost felt like you were set up in this life to do the work you're doing because I remember you saying that when you were a answering the yes and no questions, that you could see her countenance light up and she was in a better place after being able to communicate. And I don't think any of us can imagine what it would be like to live with the frustration of not being able to communicate in a fluid way. And there are speech assistive devices available to people that are mostly affluent. So what's the cost, sort of, a speech assistive devices on the market for people who have the money to buy them?
Yeah, so a speech generating device isn't just a box like a tablet. It includes things like a mount to put it on their wheelchair. It also includes different sensors. If they can't do direct selection and select on a board, sometimes they need a sensor that they can control with their foot or even with their eye movement. So if you're looking at a full speech generating device, for a low cost one, you're looking at like $6,000. For a full one, you're looking at like $15,000, and sometimes even more. So it's a thing that has, made some headway on getting covered by insurance, but having a communication device covered by insurance can cause issues as well, because sometimes it's not medically necessary. And then, of course, people that don't have insurance, that can be really hard to get one.
And is that kind of the disconnect you saw? I mean, obviously, people that are in Ecuador don't have that reach or that capacity. So, was that sort of an area of compassion for you to go, well, they don't have access?
Yeah, absolutely. It really was all about the access, and not just in the price, but also in the type of sensors to give people access to, control a speech generating device, not just with a finger, but with eyes. And knowing that, there was so much technology out there, and I know in the beginning we prototyped with Arduinos and Raspberry Pis and these really low cost sensors that could like change someone's life. And just like you said, like, can you imagine not being able to communicate and connect with someone? And to think that these low cost sensors could allow someone to make relationships, to share their dreams with. And that was definitely one of those things that, as a freshman engineering student, really gave me a passion to bring these type of sensors that we are using every day, in our cell phones and in all this technology all around us, but really adapting that for the disability community.
So once you're in college, you have this idea, your dad's encouraging you. What was the next step for you? How did you start sort of innovating and deciding to actually make a device?
Yeah, so I guess as soon as the first thing I did was decide that I was going to make a device. I think that was just like, that was
That
it.
was
I
the
wasn't
first step,
sure.
right?
That was the first step. I was like, okay, we're going to do this. As far as the business behind it and the training and the business model, that kind of all came later. But I guess the first thing that I did was I took a trash can, I carved out two sticks, put a potentiometer in the middle of them, and hooked that up to an Arduino Mega, and basically wrote a program that allowed someone to calibrate it to say what angle, or the threshold that they needed to make a selection, and then had these WAV files playing that basically went through menus. So, for example, one was like food and the other was emotions. And so if they kick the foot and they move the potentiometer for the angle that it needed with the threshold, that would open up the food options, and then they could, select something like I want to eat or I want to cook, and then made that. So check mark. Then I made a glove so that somebody who could just twitch their finger, also press a finger on a surface. And really the whole time I was thinking about the individuals that I worked with in Ecuador. At one point I was like, Christina could use this, so like I'm sure other
Oh,
people could too. Yeah.
I love that.
And she was really like, and she still is. I actually just saw her last summer. She's doing wonderful. But really great foot control, but nonverbal cerebral palsy. Like the things that she could do with her foot, I would give her, my cell phone, and she could click down on a button. So I was thinking, like, what are ways that I can create something that was wearable for independent communication? Because a lot of times these people didn't have caregivers that around them all the time to make sure that their communication device was in the right position. But then, as soon as I had a working prototype, it was like, I gotta test this. Let's see if this works and if what I'm doing is completely, not gonna work. And that's where I found Arlen. Arlen is from Johnstown, Pennsylvania. She has cerebral palsy. She's in a residency home. And she also has great control of her feet, very strong legs, similar to Christina. And we used the foot sensor for her to share her poetry for the first time. And we're able to really adapt our program to do that. And right away, there were things, that didn't work. We tried an insert into a shoe, and she was like, that doesn't feel comfortable. I don't want anything in my shoes. And really just started this design process with her, and seeing what she would be comfortable wearing and also what was working, what was efficient, and how did that integrate into her daily life and be something that she did want to use to communicate every day. So.
I love that you are collaborating with her and that you gave her voice to say, I don't like that in my shoe, right? So to create this loop of instantaneous feedback, so you gave her a voice, but you also gave her a vote, right, on how she would interact with this device. That feels good, that doesn't feel good, this works for me, And by the way, for those that may be listening or watching, I will share the videos with Arlen. They will make you tear up instantly. This woman is a poet and her poetry is beautiful. And she is now sharing her poetry for the first time in her life because of Mary Elizabeth's ingenuity.
And but Arlen, she is so smart, and really our design has so much of her in it. And I talk about this sometimes. I know I talked about it with you, with people with disabilities just, being problem solvers because they have had to overcome hurdles their whole life. Like Arlen, she sets her VCR with her foot. So many people don't even know how to set their VCR, and she's doing it with
That's
her foot and
hilarious.
rocking it. And when her caregivers who come around, they don't know how to work this VCR. And to make sure that that experience and that perspective that she has is in this assistive technology that we're developing. And I think it's a really important population that really gets overlooked in technology and innovation, and especially innovation for the disability community.
Well, you have no idea you have no idea how much I just love you and just love what you're doing. It is such an amazing thing. And just the few videos that you have, Mary Elizabeth, you can see the light in her eyes and you can see the camaraderie between the two of you. And deciphering and working together on how to make this the best fit for her. It's really a beautiful thing. And so at some point in college then you got it working, right? You got a working prototype, right? And did you show that to your dad at the po at some point, or how'd
Oh,
you?
he was involved in this whole point.
Oh,
Don't worry.
he was. Okay.
Yeah, so he had a and still does in CNC controls. So we'd have little parts that we would need to mill out. So we'd be talking, can you make this design for us? We didn't even have a 3D printer at the time. So we have a 3D printer now, which makes rapid prototyping so easy.
Yay.
But yeah, he was, really alongside of us, but also it was, taking engineers, and a lot of times, this happened with us, was people that had all this tech skill but never interfaced with people of the disability, and seeing
Yeah.
where they could apply their skills and how much an impact that could make on a life and on many lives. And I think really for my father, that was, a really aha moment, because a lot of times people with disabilities, when you meet them for the first time, and if you're not, used to it, you might think that they don't have anything to contribute and that they don't have ideas because of their communication disability.
Right.
And believe me, when my dad saw our Lynn give us design advice, he was like, oh my God, here's this woman in the middle of Johnstown with all these ideas. We've been working in our lab and on the bench for, a year, and we didn't come up with these things. And right away she was like, hey, why don't you try it just as, a switch here, or place it here, or move the let's categorize the menus in a different way to make them more optimal, and just all these ideas. And it was really it just a great way to break down the stigma of disabilities while helping people.
I love, obviously I've been in this industry for a long time, and I love what technology can do, for people's lives. And I love that you've been able to make that connection. And I love that hearing about your dad, like that his eyes are so wide open. And I think that is something you've really made me aware of, it that makes complete sense to me now. It seems like an obvious thing is people that are not speech capable would be amazing problem solvers. They would have to be. And so to have those as your collaborators, what a genius idea, right? Plus they're going to be the ones using it. So also to have a vote in how this is. So you continue to develop it, and then did you patent it at some point?
Yeah, so actually my freshman year, I filed for my first patent. Provisional patent, full application my sophomore, which is an awesome, 2.5, 3 years waiting to hear back from the patent examiner. But we were awarded our first patent, November 2016. So super
Exciting.
excited. Yeah, it happened like 2 weeks before our Indiegogo campaign went live. So there was just a lot of excitement going around that. And yeah, so that was our first one down. Hopefully many more to go. We're always innovating new things around here, but yeah, that was a huge accomplishment for me. But yeah.
Yeah, not many have their first patent awarded while they're in college. That's pretty neat. So you got your patent, and tell us about, you had mentioned on the phone about, I think it was in your junior year, about Penn State coming up with a young entrepreneur program. And so you started filing for some competitions or some things that would actually give you some funding to help move you forward.
Yeah, so really in my junior years, I kind of had this realization that if I was going to make the impact that I wanted, a large social impact, I was going to have to scale. If I was going to scale, I would need a really, a sustainable business model to fuel that. So luckily, right around, Project Vive's birth, Penn State and President Barron launched the Invent Penn State initiative, which started Happy Valley Launchbox, which was a no-cost business accelerator downtown for students and community members. So we applied for that. We were the first ones in. So being the first cohort team, it was like an empty building. No one was there at the time. And yeah, it was actually really cool for us because we went from like being in a dorm to like having this awesome space. But then they had, an InQ competition where we pitched Project Vive in front of a Shark Tank kind of setup at our university, and it was actually aired on WPSU, and we got $17,000 from that, which was huge for us at the
That's a
time.
lot of money, yeah.
And that really, just gave us validation that what we were creating was something, that was needed. It also pressed us to do a market analysis and realize that, wow, there are so many people that need these type of devices that just can't afford it or don't know that it exists. So yeah, it took advantage of that in college.
So before we go forward, something we didn't mention, but I think it's good to insert here is so jumping ahead for a moment, what is your plan to market the Vose box at once you go to market?
I really, have a passion for developing countries and also South America. So two things of how we're going to go to market. One is there's a lot of trade shows for people with disabilities. So there's ATIA, the Assistive Technology International Association, ASHA, and where you can set up a booth and speech language pathologists, parents, teachers, and also augmented alternative communication users or people with disabilities that use speech generating devices will come to learn about new technologies. So that's definitely one way. We're also doing kind of grassroots by reaching out to local disability organizations here in State College that also have chapters, all over the world. So, and definitely all over the US. Easter Seals, so we've done a collaboration with them. But yeah.
So what is your price point?
So right now we're going,
That
yeah.
you're projecting. I'm not, we won't hold you to this, but what's your projected price point that you'd like to sell it for?
Yeah, our projected price point is $500.
$500.
Yeah. And
That
that's for the full communication device. And then also we're going to be doing a lot of, open source devices that can help you and ways of creating mounting systems on your own to even get that lower.
It's incredible. Like, I see that as such a, I mean, lowering the barrier to entry to almost anyone, right? Because I wanted to mention the price point before we move ahead. And so you won the $17,000, then you entered a couple other competitions. Tell us about those.
We applied for the ALS Association and Prize for Life Assistive Technology Challenge, where we were one of five out of 87 teams. It was an eight international, excuse me, competition, and we were flown out to Ireland, where they brought
Wow.
in, yeah, and they brought in ALS patients from all over the world to try out our
Oh.
technology. Which was a really important thing for me. I've had two uncles who have passed away with ALS. And even though I, had a lot of work with children and adults with cerebral palsy, ALS is a terrible disease, and 75% of people with ALS will lose their voice. You have 2 to 5 years to live after diagnosis. And to see our devices that I had created, thinking of specifically people in this orphanage, but then realizing that people like my uncles could also use these devices. We had someone from Iceland, another person from Japan. We've developed also these little blink detector glasses that you can basically blink to select, and he used those and he loved them. And he was able to spell out a word, and just to see someone from Japan to meet us in Ireland, try out our devices and realize that so many people around the world, not only with cerebral palsy, but with ALS and Rett syndrome, it just really opened my eyes to the impact that this could have. And then also getting the support from the ALS Association was really awesome.
That's an incredible story. You have a video on that also, right, Mary Elizabeth? Okay, so we're going to share that one as well in the show notes. And the last award that I think you mentioned to me what had to do with Cisco, right? So tell us about that one.
Yeah,
Well,
so
I'll let you tell the story, but because I know you had an Indiegogo campaign too and a patent. You had lots going on, so spell it out however how you you know, I may be getting these things out of order, so.
Actually, you're not.
Okay,
That's
good.
exactly how it went.
Okay, good.
So then, this is actually last summer. We applied for the Cisco Global Problem Solvers Challenge, which was inaugural. It was also the first Global Problem Solver Challenge that they've had. For some reason, Project Viva is the guinea pig for everything, it seems. But yeah, so we applied for that, and I really could talk about my mission and working with, people in Ecuador and just the low price point and how this wasn't just for people in the US or people in Ecuador, but also we did a little work with a professor in communication disorders who was in Sri Lanka, and we sent a device out to her, which used it with a boy who was 17 years old with cerebral palsy. And it's just so many places in the world don't have access to this type of technology, and in schools and education, and also in just adult community life. So we applied for that, made a video for it, and they had this People's Choice Award. So the main award was for $100,000, and the People's Choice was for 10K. And I got everyone to vote for it. I sent out to my university, all my professors, vote for us, Project Vive, all my friends and family, and all of Arlen's friends and family too. And then that the day that they were going to announce it, I kept on refreshing the People's Choice page, and all of a sudden I realized that this team from Costa Rica won, and I was like, oh man, we didn't get the People's Choice. And then I checked my email and it said, congratulations, grand prize winner Cisco,
Oh
$100,000.
my gosh, you won
I
100 grand.
I know, and I was counting the zeros because I was like, wait, that's not 10K, like what's going on? And I mean, I still can't believe it. And it's been a couple months now, but that just really pumped into our research and development and got us to where we are right now and creating our final product. And yeah, we're just really, really thankful for that support.
That's amazing. I gotta say, I'm not surprised, but it's the best story ever. And then, so lastly, tell us about the Indiegogo campaign and your road to 10 voices that ended up being more than 10 voices.
Yeah, so we did a Indiegogo campaign, Journey to 10 Voices, and I was actually in Ireland for like the end of it, but we raised enough for 14 voices actually, so that was
Exciting.
really exciting,
That is
and that
something.
really, yeah, that's really allowed us to reach out to the community. For instance, a recipient of one of our Journey to 10, well, 14 voices, was a 16-year-old who lives an hour outside of State College, and he's doing great. We also helped him out with a wheelchair gas pedal. So he not only is using his speech generating device with a knee sensor, but also able to independently move around, which has been so cool. And he's just learning so much from having a device that really wasn't reliable before we helped him. And then, just learning from another person. So it's been really cool.
That's something else. We have
Yeah.
pictures. So when Mary Elizabeth introduced herself to me on LinkedIn, she sent me a screenshot of him getting his voice, and you've never seen a kid smile this big in your life. You know, I thought he was going
Yeah.
to rip his ears off with a smile. He was just so happy, and it just makes you can see me like at the smiled grin talking to you this whole time. It's just a beautiful story. So when So now you have seed money,
Yeah.
right? And so tell us where you are now and kind of what the next year or so holds as you forge forward.
Yeah, so really, it was a great thing that this whole time we've been working with users, also talking with, doctors and teachers, that we did the iCor program where we interviewed 50 people from all over the world, parents, speech language pathologists, doctors, teachers, augmentative alternative communication users themselves, and really took one, the user testing that we did, our feedback, what we've learned, the market analysis that we've done, and then also these interviews to test our assumptions and make our final product. So really what we're developing now is the next thing of our beta product and creating something that we believe is going to be able to scale, that we can bring to places like Ecuador and Sri Lanka, and that we're going to be able to make a sustainable business model on. Because I know I talked to you about this. We really want to make sure that once we give a voice, that we don't take it away. And I think that it's been a great thing that during college, I've been able to experiment and test and really have this quick feedback loop in creating something that will make a long-lasting impact. So that's what we're doing
I
now.
think that's really shows so much a vision on your part, actually, Mary Elizabeth, because I can't imagine, again, I can't imagine giving someone a voice and then having to take it away, right? That would be so devastating, and that you've had the foresight to make sure that it's sustainable and that you're looking at it not only from an engineering and visionary, but a very practical standpoint to make sure that you're going to build a solid business. So I really appreciate that about you.
Yeah, there's
So,
got to be someone there to answer the phones when something goes wrong. So.
right. So I love that you're actually building a sound company and having good mentors and helping you along, and that you have a really solid vision on this. Well, what else do we need to talk about? So you're heading towards a scalable product. I think I'll insert here that I got to meet Mary Elizabeth's and Project Vive's CTO, Trip. What's Trip's last name?
Miller.
Miller. I got to meet Trip Miller, and we had a call. So one of the roadblocks that they ran into is that they were using basically a free design tool. That got them this far, but they needed something further. And God bless Altium. They were able to sponsor Mary Elizabeth and Project Vive and give them a license of Altium Designer. So they've been having a lot of fun. Trip's been like a kid in a candy store.
No, he
So.
really has. I mean, the trouble that we have gone through, and also just, working with other collaborators and not being able to get the right, schematics for them, and having to basically transfer not only, our Altium files, or yeah, I don't want to say the exact names of
Yeah, I know. I was trying to
the
avoid
ACV
that too. Some company's
some
schematic.
company somewhere,
Yeah.
but we've just been able to very quickly start up. I know that it took us about 4 hours to start up our other PCB programs, and with Altium, like within an hour, we were creating traces, which was just awesome. So we are so excited, and just being able it's accelerated our development, and we're very thankful for it. You guys
We
are.
feel lucky. We feel like we get to have the privilege of removing a roadblock for you and just let you charge ahead, my dear. So good for you and Trip, and I'm really glad that we really had the privilege to do that for you. So we are gonna list in the show notes everything about Project Vive, the Vose box, anything you want us to share, let's share it because it's a beautiful story. And all of us that love technology love to see kind of the social aspect of doing good in the world through use of innovation and technology. And you're kind of like a STEM girl poster child, which is really fun for me as a woman in tech to see how you came up and your parents, how they inspired you, and this is really great. What else should we share with the listeners? Have I skipped anything? What else can we talk about? Have we missed anything?
If you really do feel moved by Project Vive's story, we do have a fiscal sponsor, so we accept tax-deductible donations. And if
Yay.
you go to projectvive.com, you can hit the donate button, or just support us, like us on social media, and share our story. And if you have, any family members that would be interested in our technology, let us know, and we would love to help.
Great.
Great.
Well, thank you. This has been the highlight of my day, and we will also be be sharing Mary Elizabeth's story. I've interviewed her already, and she will be also in the On Track newsletter coming up in June. And so keep your eyes open for that. If you do not subscribe to the On Track newsletter, you can go to resources.allteam.com and subscribe. There's a newsletter tab there, and you su can subscribe. So if you're not already subscribed, you can subscribe there. And again, in the newsletter, we'll include all these links in that because we certainly want to put her on the Altium platform and celebrate all this young innovators doing. So, Mary Elizabeth, you are the best. Thank you so much for spending your time today. I know you're a busy woman, and we'll stay in touch. And thank you again for all you're doing. We just think you're wonderful.
We do too. Thank you so much, Judy, and thank you so much to Altium. We're just very blessed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, this has been Judy Warner with the On Track podcast with Mary Elizabeth McCulloch of Project Vive. We look forward to hanging out with you again on this podcast. Until then, remember to always stay on track.